powerful is the Cox Network. So powerful that one day, the internet will let your doctor perform miracles from thousands of miles away.
Connecting to remote operating room.
Giving a whole new meaning to the term house call.
Operation complete.
The Cox Network. With multi-gig speeds now available, it's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, bringing us closer. Limited availability in select areas. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms apply. Other restrictions may apply.
The Las Vegas Raiders have partnered with the global lifestyle app True Connect to give the gift of wellness. Transform your mind, body, and soul through thousands of hours of premium fitness content, guided meditations, progress tracking, and more. Visit tcfree.fit to redeem one free year of True Connect exclusively for Raider Nation.
You're listening to the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast. Here are your hosts, Bucky Brooks and Rhett Lewis.
Raider Nation, welcome to Draft Month. Yes, we have finally turned that calendar to April. And so, of course, full steam ahead to Detroit and the 2025 NFL Draft, kicking off, of course, April 25th with night one and picks 1 through 32. But obviously, right here on the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast, we are zeroed in on pick number 13 when the Las Vegas Raiders hit the clock. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode alongside the great Bucky Brooks. I am Rhett Lewis. Great to be back here with you, and great for Bucky and I to kind of get back together here after, you know, last week where we both kind of went our separate ways, traveling to different pro days and into kind of being around for different pro day environments and atmospheres as some of the top players in the country kind of continue making their lasting impressions on NFL evaluators.
Yeah, no, Rhett, it was really good time. Like, pro days are always fun. It's not just like what the prospects and stuff are doing, but it's watching the decision makers around the prospects, not trying to blow their cover, not trying to tip their hand in terms of which guys they like and those things. And last week was, look, huge amount of pro days, not only because you had the big time quarterbacks that were throwing, you had some marquee athletes. You were at the Big 12.
That's right.
I guess it's the pro day workout, almost like a little mini combine.
It was like a second combine, right?
Yeah. And then I had an opportunity to watch Drake May and Jim Daniels put on shows respectively in front of scouts. So it's always a good time.
Yeah, let's start there with those two quarterback pro days, because we've kind of gone through, you know, some of the bigger ones in recent episodes. Obviously, we talked a lot about Caleb Williams and the USC pro day that we were both a part of, and then J.J. McCarthy, you know, had his as well at Michigan, and, you know, kind of talk about those guys and along with May and Daniels and then Bo Nix, of course, as well, you know, as the top guys in this class. And look, certainly there's an opportunity, you know, for Las Vegas to be interested, you know, in finding a potential franchise quarterback if they don't feel like that one is currently on the roster. And so we'll kind of continue digging into that position group as we continue to get these data points, which, you know, right now some of the last ones we'll get are those pro days. So let's start with a guy I believe to be the number two guy in the class. I'm not sure where you stand on it as of yet. I know we talked about Jaden Daniels, maybe even two. But let's start with Drake May, your UNC Tar Heel, as you watched him throw it around. What were kind of some of your big takeaways?
One, I'm very impressed with his talent. You know, I don't think people realize how big he is or how talented he is until you get a chance to see him just throwing the ball around in his shorts and T-shirt. He is someone who has outstanding natural talent. The game is easy for him based on his physical dimensions, his arm talent, his athleticism, high IQ, great leadership skills. All those qualities were on display. But during the workout, I think he came away more impressed with what he could be, what he could become. And a lot of times scouting goes from being about production to more projection. He projects like a superstar type quarterback. I think it's interesting when you watch NFL Network, he has his first draft and he talks about the guys that he may pattern his game after. He talked about Josh Allen. And when you think about Josh Allen's talent, his upside, and how Josh Allen was viewed at Wyoming, it was hard for everyone to warm up to the fact that he may be the second or third guy taken off the board. In time, he has proven his supporters right, though, because he has played at a high level. He's done it his own way, but he's been able to play at a very high level since entering the league. When you think about Drake May, very similar. Disappointing final season. Supporting cast wasn't necessarily up to the standard. Made some plays, flashed some plays, and those things, but he didn't have the consistent production that typically would lead you to believe that he would be behind Jaden Daniels when it comes to the eyes of evaluators.
Yeah. And look, I thought it was a really impressive workout. And I think he's a really impressive guy to get a chance to talk to. You know, I know our guys, Garofolo and Steve Smith Sr. were there on site, got a chance to talk to him. And I got a chance to sit next to him, you know, down at the Manning Passing Academy this past summer. And I just, you know, I kind of just remember coming away, you know, just being really impressed with how self-aware he is. You know, this was going into the season where he's already being talked about as the number one or number two potential draft pick following this season. It was following in, you know, an off season where, you know, depending on who you believe and the reports you read, was offered a, you know, boatloads of money to leave UNC. Yeah. But felt like that was a special place for him, obviously considering his family connection, his dad having been a part of Mack Brown's first staff when he was there at UNC the first time, and wanted to stay there and leave his mark. And this is coming off a season in which, you know, he was prolific, right, in the pass game, had massive numbers in 2022. And then when those numbers dropped off, it was like, oh, well, the kid can't play anymore. In no way, you know, he shouldn't be the number two pick anymore. But then you also couple that with Jaden Daniels' meteoric rise, right? Very similar to the way we saw Joe Burrow rise at LSU, you know, in year over year after transferring in from another school. So I guess my question to you on Drake May before we get into Jaden is, how will NFL teams, how might the Raiders look at the 2022 production and maybe the lack of meeting those expectations in 2023, knowing that teams weren't the same, talent wasn't the same, cast around him wasn't the same, and some of those variables weren't going to be the same?
So I think it's interesting that we've already had a discussion about Drake May and Josh Allen, because a lot of people had to use the same tactics when it came to evaluating Josh Allen. His final season was drastically different than his sophomore. Didn't have the same support and cast, didn't have the same play call, the weapons around him didn't look the same. You begin to wonder about stuff, you know, so you see how that goes. So then he gets with the Buffalo Bills, plays at a high level. Drake May could have a similar ascension up the charts. People will look at and appreciate the natural talent. They will look at and imagine what he could be in the right system that played to his strengths. Some teams will offer him the opportunity to kind of jump in and be able to be surrounded by what allows him to flourish. And if you get that, then you have a superstar on your hands. A lot of it is beauty's in the eye of the beholder. What do I want to focus on? Don't want to focus on what he can do. He misses a belt loop. He can't hit this ball on the out. Or do I want to think about the potential and what it be and what the highest heights that he can get to on occasion? Can we kind of find a way to find that more consistently? That's what it comes down to. He is a projection only in terms of his production from his final match, the athletic talent, but the traits are certainly good enough to be a high-end quarterback.
Yeah. So that's, I think that's an important distinction to have, right? He's got all the traits. You have seen the production. And even though you didn't see that in the final year, it does, you know, the proof is there for you to go watch it, you know, and to go see it. I feel like the Commanders are going to sit there and pick Drake May at number two overall, but, you know, stranger things. And certainly Jaden Daniels warrants being in that discussion. His play this year was incredible, you know, both through the air and on the ground. You know, just you watch that Florida game and he just absolutely eats them up, right? Again, with his arm, with his legs, he is kind of that modern turn on quarterbacks that in the league today that have that great athleticism. And by the way, Drake May has athleticism too. He's rushed for over 1,200 yards in his career in college, but it's not on Jaden Daniels' level. In fact, the only guy that's probably, you know, above Jaden Daniels when he steps foot in the league is Lamar Jackson in terms of talent running the football, which I think is part of what enamors you about Jaden Daniels' game. So when you watched him at the pro day, because again, we didn't get to see him at the combine, did you get to paint a picture of what it might look like at all once he gets to the league?
Yeah, I think it was easy to really paint a picture of what it might look like. He is really good at working the intermediate areas of the field. You see him on tape time and time again. He throws with touch, timing, anticipation. He throws guys open. He doesn't mind throwing into multiple defenders in an area to squeeze the ball into a tight space. He has all of that. He's probably one of the more natural passers I've ever evaluated. He just throws it, you know, and little regard for what it looks like or whatever, but it always appears to come down in a spiral and on point. Yeah. The thing that you worry about, though, is he's so slender and he doesn't appear to have like those eyes in the back of his head. Like he gets hit, he gets dropped. I mean, yeah. it's just one of those things that you worry about from a durability standpoint. How much of a licking can he take? That's the million-dollar question, because you just don't see guys his frame play in the league, but he's larger than some of the current guys in the league.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's bigger than Bryce Young. I mean, at least we think. I mean, we don't really have a measurement on him, and I'm not sure we're really going to get one, although teams, you know, from the pro day probably, you know, mm-hmm. might have gotten a chance to put him on a scale or under the tape measure. And you know, look, Bryce, you know, for all the struggles that they had in Carolina, you know, yep. and he got hit, but he got up. And
every
and
time.
So, you know, yeah, he got up every time. So, again, I think, you know, that can give you a sense of what that might look like, you know, from the, you know, from Jaden Daniels' perspective, although you certainly don't want him to get hit that much. And look, you know, no. it just so happens, you know, we're talking about the Bears at one, likely with Caleb Williams, Commanders at two, Patriots at three. If I'm one of those teams and I know I need a quarterback, mostly because I just don't even really have one with major, you know, big time elite starting experience, I don't know how I pass up on that. I don't know how I trade out of that spot and out of that opportunity. And we'll get into that here in just a second. But I did, while we continue on the pro day theme, Big 12 pro day. Mm-hmm. We went down there and you saw it on NFL Network, went down there over the course of a couple of days. And look, I thought it was kind of a unique idea, Bucky. I mean, Brett Yormark has been one of those guys that wants to be revolutionary, that wants to elevate everything he does as commissioner of the Big 12 Conference. And a great idea, like to bring everyone together, to have the eyes of the talent evaluation world on mm-hmm. one spot for all, you know, it was 12 schools there. It's kind of weird. They are a conference in transition, right? With Texas and Oklahoma mm-hmm. on the way out. And then with the new schools, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah on the way in. None of those outgoing or incoming schools were at this one. It was the schools that played in the Big 12 this past year, minus Texas and Oklahoma. You know, there weren't quarterbacks there that warrant, you know, top draft pick consideration. John Rhys Plumlee, a guy we saw at the Shrine Bowl, you know, threw a bunch and actually did his own little pseudo pro day workout. And, you know, there's other guys like Jason Bean from Kansas, you know, who teams may take late round flyers on or priority free agents. But there are some dudes that we saw at corner. And look, corner is a position you and I have talked about as potential targeting spots for the Raiders, you know, at 13 or beyond. And I don't know if either of these guys are 13 worthy, but, you know, once you get into day two, Beanie Bishop from West Virginia, yeah. who we also saw at the mm-hmm. Shrine Bowl, and TJ Tampa from Iowa State. Both ran really fast. Beanie had the fastest time of anybody at the Big 12 Pro Day. He ran sub 4.4. He's got return ability. Mm-hmm. And then Tampa's that big, long dude, right? And so it was one of the best corners in the Big 12 this last year. So I look at those guys as real potential impact players, you know, in the league and maybe guys that the Raiders could entertain a little bit further down the road.
Yeah. So when you think about TJ Tampa, I'm so glad that you brought his name up because there's been a lot of conversation surrounding his opportunities to play at the next level. This is a big, long, very physical corner. A guy that's very comfortable in zone, but also in man-to-man. And as this team continues to transition into a team that plays a little more man, a little more sticky coverage with AP and Patrick Graham trying to really get after the quarterback, you have to have guys that have kind of like a deep and expansive toolbox. I just love thinking about what he could be, TJ Tampa, in the game on a corner, being able to tackle, being involved in the running game, because so much of what they do, like even in playing all the man-to-man that they do, it's about tackling, it's about toughness, it's about effort. They do those things that can win a lot of games.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, with the new kickoff rules, and we haven't really, you know, talked about this a bunch, and bringing the kickoff back, you know, I'm just kind of curious, you get, you know, defensive backs, guys who you are going to really count on, mm-hmm. you know, whether that's, you know, on cover teams, on teams in general, or, you know, just as a rotational defensive back piece, those that have that kick return ability now, since we are, again, re-emphasizing mm-hmm. the return with these new rules, a player like Beanie Bishop, who's got that experience, you know, now kind of sees, maybe able to reap the benefit off that added value don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think the added value, being multi-phase players, being able to excel in the kicking game and also the returner. It's so, yeah, so hard to find those guys. Well, now with the kickoff rules, man, they're making it wide open. Wide open in terms of if you can get past the first level, you may score. It's an interesting thing, but like, Red, the part of the roster that you're talking about is the part that really concerns everybody. Because it's not about pleasing everybody. It's about making sure that you get the right kind of stuff. You get the right kind of people in the building. You do all that other stuff. With the kicking units and the special teams, finding those starters that can enhance it by running kicks or by covering kicks, yeah, it makes a huge difference. That's why some of the guys that we talk about that had legitimate return skills are going to get an added boost when it comes to draft day.
Yes. And then, you know, on the flip side, you know, depth at wide receiver now, right? Like, you know, looking, who are you looking to outside of Jacoby Myers and obviously Devontae Adams? You know, Trey Tucker from a year ago, again, a name to kind of continue to watch as he continues his NFL development. But we saw another guy at the Big 12 Pro Day, you know, who was invited to the Senior Bowl as well. Javon Baker from Central Florida is a kind of intriguing name. He's a 4.4 40 guy. He's got that speed. He was a massive recruit coming out of high school, initially signed at Alabama, played in 20 games there. Behind some pretty good receivers, right? Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, John Metchie, the list goes on and on. So didn't have that production those first 2 years at Alabama, just 9 catches, 116 yards and a touchdown in his first two collegiate seasons. Then hits the portal, finds a landing spot with Gus Malzahn in Central Florida and has John Rhys Plumlee thrown him the football and he explodes. He explodes to the tune of, you know, 108 catches, almost 2,000 receiving yards, and 12 touchdowns in the last two seasons combined. But the part that really strikes me, and he's a good route runner. He showcased that talent at the Big 12 Pro Day. The thing that really kind of strikes me is the 21.9 yards per reception. Okay, he averages an explosive play every time he touches the football, right? Like a big time explosive play, over 20 yards. And, you know, that number led all of FBS, all of college football. Nobody was better than Javon Baker in terms of yards per reception. Not like he only caught 12 balls. Guy caught 52 balls this year. So it's a pretty good sample size, Bucky. And then, you know, to kind of add that in to a roster that's got some really, you know, some good pieces at wide receiver, I feel like it just kind of further helps you build that basketball team of wideouts.
Basketball team of wideouts. You want to be able to assess what you have. You got a bunch of 6 foot guys. Okay, we need somebody smaller. We need somebody bigger. We want someone that can command space in the middle of the field so I can free Devontae Adams up to have one-on-one coverage. I want a catch and run specialist. So now if I have a young quarterback, I want to throw him to some short and sweet and allow him to pick up the bulk of the yards. These guys, when you've been in the team building business for a long time, like guys will kind of follow those clues and you'll see others kind of walking around and kind of doing some of the same stuff that best are doing or whatever. So to me, when I think about this team and where they're at and how well positioned they are to really upgrade the roster, I think you're going to have to take some chances and make sure that you got your special teams unit upgraded, that you have guys at wide receiver that can come in and contribute. And you got to have some of those receivers that also can give you some production in the return game.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, I think there's a lot to gain from these pro day moments. Again, gives you one last look at these guys before you get a chance, you know, to fill out their name on a card, turn it in, you know, and then hear their name called at the podium once we get to Detroit. So again, Javon Baker, a name to keep an eye on. I think those two corners are really guys to kind of continue to follow and watch at two positions. You know, at some point we could see the Raiders address. But again, I keep coming back to the quarterback spot just because it is such a point of intrigue and of drama as it pertains to this draft and this talented quarterback class as a whole. I still think it's very possible we get 6 quarterbacks off the board in the first 15 picks. Like that's just kind of where we are, right? And it feels almost like a given now that we're going to get 3 off the board in the top 3 picks, which brings up an interesting kind of flashback to the 2021 draft, right? When we had Trevor Lawrence, we had Zach Wilson, we had Trey Lance, Justin Fields, and then, you know, of course, Mac Jones as the last quarterback. So we had 5 in the top 15. Yep. Now, the biggest piece about the, you know, the drama surrounding that year was the 49ers. The 49ers moving up from 12 to 3, right? So they moved up from 12 to 3, gave up a ton of picks, right? They had a pick swap, 12 and 3, and then gave up two future first-round picks and a little bit of sugar for the right to go up and take Trey Lance. At that point, they probably felt pretty comfortable that, you know, it was going to go Trevor Lawrence and then Zach Wilson. So, you know, they obviously had their eye on Trey. Look, that didn't end up working out. But the reason I bring that up is for context, for those kind of wondering, all right, what would it take for the Raiders if that is their prerogative? And again, we're not saying it is, but we're here to kind of suss out all the potential, you know, options and investigate all those possibilities, right? So look, this is what it would look like. The, if you follow the Jimmy Johnson trade chart, that 2024 number 3 overall pick, let's just say that's where you're looking at going, it's worth about 2,200 points on this point system. The 13th overall pick, Bucky, as you know, is worth about 1,150 points. So there's still, you still got to make up quite a gap to pull off or execute a trade that the other team would consider even. So that involves bringing in a first round pick in 2025. And since we don't know where that pick would land, it's not as valuable. It's worth about 900 points. So that gets us to 2,000. And then there's the idea, Bucky, that, you know, when you're going up with the idea to go get a quarterback, it's probably going to cost you a little premium, right? It's probably not going to be a one for one. The other team can kind of hold you over a barrel a little bit, knowing that you're going to pay extra for a quarterback. So like the 49ers did, you're probably going to be talking about giving up a 2026 first round pick, right? So now you're really getting down the road, and these are major, you know, franchise building assets here. Does that haul, that potential, you know, bag of goodies that you have to give up to move up there to go get a quarterback, does that make sense in terms of value with this quarterback class in your mind?
Yeah, it does make sense, you know, because ultimately you have to have one, and we can continue to romanticize and talk about waiting and, you know, having the rest of the team fit, then we drop the quarterback in. That rarely happens. That's why it never happens. I think what you have to do is you got to assess who are the guys that are your must-haves when it comes to that I got to have when I come out of the draft. Because we all fall in love with guys, but who are the prospects you must have?
Sure.
And then if we're talking about quarterback position, it's trying to figure out, okay, like what works, what fits, who is the best fit for a short term, who's the best for a long term, where are they at in their growth models and all this stuff. Like all of that stuff comes into play. And then who responds well to like the people that we have in the building, the coaches and all that other stuff. So I think it's a lot. It's a lot to consider. But I think if you're the Raiders, your Tom Telesco or whatever, as you're looking at your roster and as you're looking at the backups, and you're looking at the landscape of the league, it's just a younger group that's coming, and you have to be willing to take chances. And some of those chances may backfire, but it didn't deter the San Francisco 49ers from making a run. They took a swing and a miss. It didn't work out, but out of the miss of Trey Lance came the emergence of Brock Purdy. I think you have to have a similar approach. A draft pick is a draft pick. No matter when we use them, you still don't know where they're going to be. So just keep swinging until you get one.
Yeah. And again, to hammer home, you know, the concept of paying a premium, right, for a pick that the other party knows you're going up to get a quarterback. Like, let's just say, I said 2,200 is the value for a 2024 third overall pick. You add in, you know, the 13, 2025 first rounder, probably a 2025 third rounder too, and then a 2026 first, you're giving up, you know, 2,820 points. So that is essentially 128% of the value of the number three pick. So you think about that extra 30% as the premium to go get a quarterback. Now, look, here's the thing. Every franchise is going to have their own take on the point system, their own take on what the values mean to them, on what their analytics teams are saying makes the most sense for them. So this is, again, it's just a baseline. It's something to kind of think about and to work off. And so like when I look at that, I'm like, that's a lot of value, man.
Yeah.
Is that if you're going to go get Jaden Daniels or Drake May, I think I can get behind it. But if you're going to get, like, let's say a JJ McCarthy, who I just feel like at this point has a little bit more of a projection to him than the other two, I'm a little hesitant.
You should be yeah. hesitant, because if we go back to yesterday and how Bill Parcells used to, Scott, he had a formula. You know, he wanted guys to play in at least 30 starts, 23 wins. Yep. He had to be able to do other sports outside of just, yeah. like, where does he exist? And it's part about building up the entire person. When I look at this team and I look at some of the issues that you talk about, like, hey, we're trying to figure out how to put the best combination together to get the quarterback that we want, but also having some other stuff to come back to fill some needs. Man, it's just very, very difficult. And so I think what you have to do is grade all the players first, then make the situation afterwards. Yeah. Like before combine or whatever, grade them first, see how they run. So now I want, you know, I know exactly what I'm doing. I feel better about the whole process and those things. But yeah. I know everyone loves drafts, but man, it's a lot easier said, harder to execute without getting your shirt taken off your back.
Sure. Sure. And that's a good way to put it. So, and again, on timing, you know, if you're going to make a move to number two or number three, you're comfortable with, you know, all three quarterbacks, right, that are in that conversation. And you could make that move today. You could make that move tomorrow. If you're making a move to four or five, as we kind of had the conversation on Path to the Draft, you know, earlier this week on NFL Network, you might wait until draft day to see who those three quarterbacks are off the board. Because otherwise, 100%. You're talking about having to get comfortable with four, maybe even five quarterbacks. And that's a lot of stuff to give up, you know, to not know. So,
yeah, that's a lot of intel, right? A lot of man hours, a lot of other stuff trying to dig and pry. That's a lot.
Yeah. And so, you know, the scenario I keep coming back to is, okay, let's say the quarterbacks go, let's say the Vikings trade up from 11, you know, let's say they trade up to four with the Cardinals. I know that the Broncos need a quarterback, my division rival, picking one spot in front of me. Maybe it's more plausible that we call Monty Ossenfort, you know, when they're on the clock at 11 now after trading out of number four, and we say, hey, we know our guy is still on the board. We want to make sure we get him. We want to come up to 11, right? To get in front of the Broncos, who are probably considering the same type of thing and the same type of move, knowing that they've got the Raiders behind them. But like, look, you play out, that feels like a more reasonable scenario where you're probably giving up what, maybe a day two, probably a day three pick to make that spot, that move up two spots from 13 to 11.
Yeah. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to box teams out,
somebody out.
Meaning you're trying to put your body in front of them to prevent them from getting the player that you have your eyes on. And what that takes is not only understanding the player and the things we talked about, what makes players great, but it is also looking at the opposing coach and understanding who this team is, how they think about it, how they go about business. Like all of those other things kind of factor into it. But I will say, and I'm actually glad you brought up the trade thing, because the trade thing comes up quite frequently when we come to mock drafts. Man, just know that one trade, two trades early
screws it all up.
It's blown to smithereens.
It's all over, right? Yeah. So that's a great way to end this episode, I think, right there. Leaving it all blown to smithereens. Drama and chaos left in our wake once we get to Detroit on April 25th. Thanks again, everybody, for being with us here on another episode of the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast. Thanks to our great friends at Silver and Black Productions for making this thing sing each and every week. And excited to kind of continue projecting the draft, projecting as much as we can and kind of understanding the different scenarios that are going to play out when we get to the draft in Detroit on April 25th. So for Bucky Brooks, I'm Rhett Lewis. Thanks again, everybody. And we'll catch up with you down this path to the draft and Detroit.
Thank you for listening to the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the Raiders Podcast Network wherever you get your podcasts.